Two men in tricorn hats and clothes of the 1790s run along a city street, looking behind them. One of them is Sulu.
O'Neill, we've got to keep going. Come on, get up.
It's no use. They're everywhere.
A hooded figure appears.
The captain gave us an order. We've got to find some clue.
It's no use, Mr. Sulu. Look, there's one of them.
A second figure.
There's another one.
Scouting party to Enterprise. Come in.
What is it, Mr. Sulu?
Captain, beam us up quick. Emergency.
Transporter room. Lock onto Sulu and O'Neill. Beam up immediately.
We've got to make a run for it. We can't just stand here.
Mr. O'Neill, stand tight. They'll beam us up any minute.
Run, I tell you. We got to get out of here. You know what they're capable of. O'Neill!
O'Neill runs. One of the hooded monk-like figures holding a staff about 6 feet long comes up to Sulu and points it at him. Sulu stiffens and arches his back. Then a strange, beatific smile comes over his face. At the same moment, he starts to dematerialize as he's beamed up to the Enterprise. Kirk hurries into the transporter room, where Sulu, still in his 18th century boots and waistcoat, holds a bundle of clothes under his arm.
Sulu, what is it? Where's Lieutenant O'Neill?
What? Who?
Lieutenant O'Neill, where is he?
You. You're not of the body.
Dr. McCoy.
Dr. McCoy, transporter room, quickly.
You did it. They knew we were Archons. These are the clothes they wear, not these.
Sulu, take it easy. Sit down.
Kirk sits him on the edge of the platform. McCoy comes in.
What happened? You're wonderful. You're the sweetest, friendliest people in the universe.
He turns to Kirk with an ethereal smile.
It's paradise, my friend. Paradise. Lieutenant O'Neill, where is he? Paradise.
Kirk and McCoy exchange a glance.
Paradise.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. The Return of the Archons.
Captain's log, stardate 3156.2. While orbiting planet Beta 3, trying to find some trace of the starship Archon that disappeared here 100 years ago, a search party consisting of 2 Enterprise officers were sent to the planet below. Mr. Sulu has returned, but in a highly agitated mental state. His condition requires I beam down with an additional search detail.
The landing party arrives.
Materialization completed. Kirk out.
With Kirk are McCoy, Spock, a sociologist called Lindstrom, and 2 guards, all dressed in clothes of the 1870s. A man similarly dressed bows as he walks past them, hand on heart.
Odd. The expression on that man's face. Mindlessness. Vacant contentment.
Like Sulu.
They look down the street.
If everybody on this planet is like him. Let's go.
They pass other strangely detached pedestrians. A man bows and puts his hand over his heart. Kirk and Spock imitate the gesture.
Joy to you, friends.
Joy to you.
You'll be strangers.
Kirk nods.
Come for the festival, eh, ya?
Yes.
Got a place to sleep it off yet?
Kirk shakes his head.
Go round to Rager's house. He's got rooms. But you'll have to hurry. It's almost the red hour.
He points at the town clock. It's nearly six.
This, festival, it starts at 6 o'clock?
Tula! These folks come for the festival. Your daddy can put them up, can't he?
The young woman looks at Lindstrom and the others.
You're from the valley?
We've, just arrived.
My father'll be glad to put you up, though.
Tula looks across the street.
It's right over there.
As the clock strikes, Tula gives an ecstatic scream. The man with her flings his hat into the air. Across the street, a man grabs a passing woman and carries her away.
Tula, come!
The man hits Kirk with a stick and drags Tula away. A young woman throws herself on Kirk's neck. Men start breaking windows, fighting, and assaulting any women they can find.
Let's get out of here!
The landing party run across the road. A chair crashes out of a storefront window. The Enterprise crew take shelter in the doorway and push their way inside. In the hallway are a man of about 50 and two older men with silver hair. They look up in surprise.
I'm sorry to break in on you like this. We didn't expect that kind of a welcome.
Welcome? You are strangers?
Yes, that's right. We're from the valley.
You came for the festival?
Yes.
Then how come you here?
Are you Redger?
Yes.
You have a daughter named Tula?
Yes.
Well, you better do something. She's outside.
I know. It's festival. It's the will of Landru.
Redger, these are young men. They're not old enough to be excused.
They're visitors.
Well, have they no lawgivers in the valley? Why be they not at the festival?
We heard that you might have rooms for us.
You see, Hakam, they've merely come looking for a place to rest afterwards.
The red hour has already struck.
Hakam, these be strangers. The valley has different ways.
Do you say that Landru is not everywhere?
No, of course not. It's simply that they may have different ways.
They've come looking for shelter. Can I turn them away? Come, please.
Lindstrom stops Redger as he leads them upstairs.
But the girl, out there.
She is in festival. As you should be.
Come, please, hurry.
The two older men remain.
The lawgivers should know.
Surely, Hakam, they already know. Are they not infallible?
You mock them. You mock the lawgivers. And the strangers are not of the body. You will see.
But, Hakam.
Hakar ignores Tamar and goes. Upstairs, Redger turns up a gas lamp to show Kirk and his men a room fitted out with bunk beds.
You can return here at close of festival. It's quiet. You'll have need of rest.
We have no plans to attend the festivals.
Redger looks shocked.
The hour is struck. You can hear.
I'd like to hear more about this festival. And Landru.
Redger looks fearful and shuts the window.
Landru. You ask?
He looks at Kirk and the six men more closely.
Oh, you're strange. You scorn festival? Are you?
What about Landru?
Again, Redger looks terrified. Later, Kirk stands at the window of their room looking outside at the rioting, debauchery and lawlessness. Fires have been set in the street. A man leaps through a shop window. He throws things out into the street.
Festival! Festival!
Men and women race around, wild-eyed. Kirk looks down into the street, pondering, then turns back to the others.
Landru. My guess is we have until morning. Let's put the time to good use. Doctor.
Your atmospheric readings to determine whether there's anything in the air to account for all this. Mr. Lindstrom, correlate all that you've seen with any other sociological parallels, if any. Mr. Spock.
He checks the corridor.
You and I have some serious thinking to do. When we leave here tomorrow morning, I want to have a plan of action.
Night passes. The landing party are all asleep on the bunk beds in their room, except for Kirk, who stands wrapped in a blanket, thinking. Outside, the dissipation continues. Kirk throws off the blanket and goes to the window. In the early morning light, men and women are chasing each other through the streets. Kirk looks at the town clock. It's nearly six. Everyone stops in mid-gesture, as if frozen. Then they begin walking the streets again as if nothing had happened in the slow, anesthetized state that the Enterprise party first encountered. Kirk starts waking people up.
Spock. Spock. Lindstrom.
He goes to McCoy. In the hallway, they find Tula, hysterical, being comforted by her father.
I'm so happy. Oh, no, it's all over now. It's all over now, child. That's all right, quiet.
McCoy leads her away.
It's all right. It's all over.
You'll give her a shot. It'll calm her down. Trust us.
You didn't even try to bring her back. What kind of father are you?
It's Landrew's will.
What about Landrew? Who is he?
It is true, then. You did not attend the festival last night.
No.
Then you're not of the body. You couldn't be.
Regia hurries away into a sitting room where McCoy and Spock have laid Tula on a sofa.
She's asleep. Are you...
Regia and Tamar go over to Kirk, who's followed them.
Are you... Archons?
What if we are?
It was said more would follow. If you are indeed...
We must hide them. Quickly, the lawgivers.
We can take care of ourselves, friend.
Landrew will know. He will come.
Hakon bursts in with two of the hooded figures and points at Tamar.
He is the one. He mocked the lawgivers. I heard him.
No, Hakon. It was a jest.
The others, they were here, but they scorned the festival. I saw it.
Tamar, stand clear.
Tamar steps towards the two figures.
I hear and obey the voice of Landrew.
One of the lawgivers points his staff at Tamar. Smoke and sparks issue from it. Tamar's eyes roll back in his head and he collapses. Regia and Kirk rush forward to support him as he falls. The lawgiver points at them.
You attack the body. You have heard the word and disobeyed. You will be absorbed.
What do you mean absorbed?
There, you see, not of the body.
You will be absorbed. The good is all. Landrew is gentle. You will come.
We're not going anywhere.
It is the law. You must come.
I said we're not going anywhere.
Spock raises an eyebrow. The two lawgivers slowly turn to each other.
Evidently, they're not prepared to deal with outright disobedience. How did you know?
Everything we've seen here so far seems to indicate some sort of compulsive, involuntary stimulus to action.
Your analysis seems logical.
The lawgivers, in their hooded robes, slowly turn back to Kirk.
It is clear that you simply did not understand. I will rephrase. You are ordered to accompany us to the absorption chambers.
Kirk steps up to them.
Why did you kill that man?
Out of order. You will obey. It is the word of Landrew.
You tell Landrew that we'll come in our own time, and that we'll speak to him.
The lawgiver goes to use his staff. Kirk snatches it.
You cannot. It is Landrew.
Landrew?
Fascinating. This is merely a hollow tube, Captain. No mechanism.
They're communing. We have time. Come with me.
Where to?
To a place I know. You'll be safe there. But we must hurry. Landrew will come.
Reger beckons the others to follow him while the two lawgivers stand mute, their heads turned in the same direction, as if listening to some unheard transmission. Spock raises the hood of the black cloak he's wearing to conceal his pointed ears. As Reger steps into the street, he slows his pace to a sedate walk, smiling at everyone who passes. He turns round to encourage the others to follow suit.
Quite a festival they had.
Peace.
What do you make of all this?
Totally illogical. Yesterday, without apparent cause or reason, they wrought total havoc. Yet today, now...
Now they're back to normal.
Morning, friends.
Morning, Bela.
Oh, daughter, that's the man.
No, it wasn't Bela, it was Landru. Let's hurry, we haven't much time.
He moves on, smiling at the people passing by, but as he looks at them more closely, his expression changes.
It's too late. Look.
What is it?
Landru, he's summoning the body.
Telepathy, Captain.
The townspeople have come to a stop. They stoop to pick up sticks and stones.
Phasers on stun. Which way, Reger?
Perhaps through there. Landru.
We'll handle Landru. Just got us out of this.
They hurry off after Reger. The townspeople, moving slowly but deliberately, start after them with sticks in their raised hands. Reger leads Kirk and the landing party down an alleyway, but more townspeople block the way ahead.
I don't want to hurt them. Warn them back.
They're in the body. It's Landru.
Phasers on stun. Whitefield. Fire.
The people blocking their path down the alleyway crumple to the ground, but more appear, advancing on them with zombie-like tread.
Fire!
As they race down the alley, McCoy stops to look at one of the fallen.
Security?
Captain.
It's Sulu's companion.
Lieutenant O'Neill. He's one of our men.
Not anymore. He's been absorbed.
Bring him along.
But I tell you, he's one of them. When he wakes, Landru will find us through him. Leave him there. He's our enemy. He's been absorbed.
Captain, now that we've got Lieutenant O'Neill, let's beam him up out of here.
We still don't know what's happened to the Archons. Which way? Bring him along.
Lindstrom and the two guards help support O'Neill under his arms, and the whole group follows Reger down the alley. The townspeople lurch after them. Reger opens a heavy door leading into a large stone undercroft. Light comes from fire, burning in iron torch holders. There's a wooden bunk bed against one wall. Reger moves the bed aside, kneels down in the corner, and produces something wrapped in a black cloth. It's a white panel the size of a large kitchen cutting board that fills the room with a brilliant white light. Lindstrom helps O'Neill to a bunk.
Put him over there.
A lighting panel.
Amazing in this culture.
Reger places the lighting panel on a high shelf.
Comes from a time before Landru.
Before Landru? How long ago was that?
Nobody knows, positively. Some say as long ago as 6,000 years.
Captain, it took a very advanced technology to construct a device like this. Inconsistent with this environment.
But not inconsistent with what we've seen, security.
Those staffs. Hollow tubes. Antenna for some sort of broadcast power. What is it, Mr. Spock?
Immensely strong power generations, Captain. Near here, but radiating in all directions.
They'll be coming around soon, Captain.
He must not. He's been absorbed.
Absorbed?
The body absorbs its enemies. It only kills when it has to. When the first Archons came, they were free, out of control, opposing the will of Landru. Many were killed. Many more were absorbed. When he regains consciousness, Landru will find us through him. And if the others come...
What others?
Well, those like you and me who resist Landru.
An underground? How are you organized?
Reger looks at Spock and Kirk hesitantly.
In threes. Myself, Tamar, who's dead now, and one other.
Who?
I don't know. Tamar was my contact.
Give me a decision, Captain. He's coming out of it.
He must not regain consciousness. He'll destroy us all. He's of the body.
Kirk ponders.
Give him a shot. Keep him asleep. Roger.
Kirk leads him to a table.
I want some answers.
Roger sits.
This underground, Landru is so powerful. How do you survive?
I don't know, Captain. Some of us escape the directives. Not many, but a few. It was that way when the first Archons came.
The Archons? Tell me about them.
They had invaded the body, but they resisted the will of Landru. You see, Landru had pulled them down from the skies.
Pulled them down from the skies? A starship? Mr. Spock, those power readings you took, are they...
Powerful enough to destroy a starship? Affirmative.
Director Enterprise, come in.
Captain, we're under attack. There are heat beams of some kind coming up from the planet's surface.
Status report.
Our shields are holding, but they're taking all our power.
If we try to warp out or even move on impulse engines, we'll lose our shields and we'll burn up like a cinder.
Orbit condition.
Checking.
On the bridge of the Enterprise, Scotty looks over the navigator's shoulder at the readings on his console.
We're going down, Captain. Unless we can get those beams off us so we can use our engines, we're due to hit atmosphere in less than 12 hours.
Keep your shield up. Do everything you can to maintain orbit. We'll try and locate the source of the beam and stop it here.
Impossible to break away. I've tried the emergency bypass circuits, but they haven't been effective.
Spock takes a reading with his tricorder.
Captain.
What is it?
Sensor beams. Very strong. We're being probed. In this direction.
Landru.
Block them out.
Too strong, Captain. Can't be blocked.
Oh.
Regger bows his head over the table. A gray-haired figure in blue and gold robes appears in front of them. He's semi-transparent, and they can see the wall through his body.
I am Landru.
Spock looks at him, unimpressed.
Projection, Captain. Unreal.
But beautiful, Mr. Spock, with no apparatus at this end.
You have come as destroyers. You bring an infection.
You are holding my ship. I demand that you release it.
You have come to a world without hate, without fear, without conflict. No war, no disease, no crime. None of the ancient evils. Landru seeks tranquility, peace for all. The universal good.
We mean you no harm. Ours is a mission of peace and goodwill.
The good must transcend the evil. It shall be done. So it has been since the beginning.
He doesn't hear you, Captain.
Maybe he'll hear this.
Put that away. Landru. Listen to me.
You will be absorbed. Your individuality will merge into the unity of good. And in your submergence into the common being of the body, you will find contentment and fulfillment. You will experience the absolute good.
Regger slumps forward onto the table. The Enterprise crew put their hands to their temples or try to stop their ears as the noise increases. One by one, they collapse and topple to the floor.
Captain's log, stardate 3157.4. The Enterprise, still under attack by some sort of heat rays from the surface of Beta 3, is now being commanded by Engineering Officer Scott. The shore party has been taken by the creature called Landru.
Kirk wakes in a stone dungeon that could be part of the same building he was in before. Spock is with him, still unconscious, and Lindstrom and one of the guards are through an archway in another part of the room. But McCoy, the second guard, and O'Neill have disappeared. Feeling through his pockets, Kirk also discovers his communicator and phaser have gone. He tries the heavy door, but it doesn't budge. Looking around in the light of flaming torches set in metal braziers, Kirk steps through to another part of the chamber that is hewn out of bare rock. He goes over to Spock and shakes the Vulcan's shoulder.
Spock.
then goes through the arch to Lindstrom.
Mr. Leslie?
Lindstrom and the guard wake and look around dopily. Spock comes through.
Where's Dr. McCoy?
He was gone when I woke up, along with the other guard and Mr. O'Neill.
I should say they'd been here and been removed.
Kirk looks around.
But where is here?
Evidently a maximum security establishment. Are you armed?
All the phasers are gone, I checked.
Spock goes to the door.
That's locked.
Whoa. Lindstrom stands, rubbing his temples.
Whoa, does my head ache.
Natural result of being subjected to a hypersonic.
Oh, is that what it was?
Sound waves. Stronger they might have killed. As it was, they merely rendered us unconscious.
Enough analysis. Let's think of a way to get out of here. What about the lawgiver's inability to cope with the unexpected?
Shouldn't depend on that happening again, Captain. A society as well organized as this one seems to be, I cannot conceive of such an oversight going uncorrected.
Spock frowns, puzzled.
Interesting, however. Their reaction to your defiance was remarkably similar to the reaction of a computer when fed insufficient or contradictory data.
Are you suggesting that the lawgivers are mere computers? That they aren't human?
Quite human, Captain. It's simply that all the facts are not yet in. There are gaps.
They look through the archway as the heavy stone door opens and two lawgivers in hooded robes carrying long staffs enter, leading McCoy and Galloway, the guard, back into the dungeon. Kirk and Spock go over to McCoy.
Doc.
Oh. Hello, friend. We were told to wait here.
Doc.
Can I help you, friend?
Don't you know me?
We all know one another. In Landru.
Like Sulu.
Kirk grabs McCoy by the shoulders.
Think, man. The Enterprise, the ship. Remember?
You speak very strangely, friend. Are you from away?
You do remember!
McCoy raises his eyes to the stone ceiling.
That's Landru. He remembers. He knows and he watches.
He looks at Kirk suspiciously.
You are strange. Are you not of the body?
Slowly, McCoy lowers himself onto the stone bench in the alcove. The heavy doorway grinds open once more, and the two lawgivers step inside. One of them points his staff at Kirk.
Come.
No.
Then you will die.
Spock turns aside.
Been corrected, Captain. Better go.
All right.
Work on Bones.
See if you can't.
Come.
Kirk, still in the 19th century waistcoat, coat, and floppy bow tie of a genteel riverboat gambler, is escorted away by the two lawgivers. Spock sits down beside McCoy.
Dr. McCoy. What will happen to him?
He goes to joy, peace, tranquility. He goes to meet Landru. Happiness is to all of us, blessed by Landru.
In a futuristic building, Kirk stands against a wall panel and metal clamps appear and pinion his arms. A man in an orange robe speaks to the lawgivers.
I am Maplan. It is your hour. Happy communing.
With thanks. Happy communing.
The lawgivers go. Maplan steps into the circular control booth. In the dungeon, Lindstrom watches Spock examining McCoy's eyes.
Well?
Spock straightens up. McCoy smiles vacantly.
Impossible. He's under extremely powerful control.
Are we just going to stand here?
Little else we can do.
Unless you can think of a way to get through that door.
Lindstrom comes to stand beside him.
Well, this is simply ridiculous. A bunch of Stone Age characters running around in robes.
And apparently commanding powers far beyond our comprehension. Not simple. Not ridiculous. Very, very dangerous.
The door opens and the two lawgivers enter. Their leader points his staff at Spock.
You come.
Spock glances back at Lindstrom before leaving, escorted by the two lawgivers. In the absorption chamber, Kirk is released from the machine. Marplon watches from the circular glass control booth as Kirk steps slowly away from the wall panel with a vacant smile. A door opens, and Spock is escorted in.
Joy to you, friend. Peace and contentment will fill you. You will know the peace of Landru.
Kirk walks away. Spock frowns and raises a slanting Vulcan eyebrow. With the two lawgivers pointing their staves at him, Spock stands with his back to the purple and white wall panel. The clamps of the absorption machine grip his wrists and the lawgivers depart.
Have no fear, friend. The effect is harmless. My name is Marplon. I was too late to save your first two friends. They have been absorbed. Beware of them.
The wrist clamps release him. Spock steps away from the machine, and Marplon comes down from the control chamber.
What about the captain?
He is unharmed, unchanged. I am the third man in Rager's triad. We have been awaiting your return.
We are not Archons, Marplon.
Whatever you may call yourselves, you are in fulfillment of prophecy. We ask your help.
Where is Rager?
He will join us. He is immune to absorption. Hurry. We have not much time.
Who is Landru?
I cannot answer your questions now. Landru, he will hear. Here are your weapons. You may need them.
The door opens.
Behave as you saw your captain behave. It is done.
Joy be with you. Peace and contentment.
With a sardonic flick of his slanting eyebrows, Spock allows the two lawgivers to escort him back to the dungeon. Marplon stays behind, hands clasped saint-like to his chest. In the dungeon, Spock nods and smiles, hand on heart, to McCoy, and goes over to Kirk and Lindstrom.
Captain. Peace and tranquility to you. Are you all right?
Quite all right. Be careful of Dr. McCoy.
I understand. Landru.
I am formulating a theory, Captain.
And?
Not here, the doctor.
You speak in strange whispers. This is not the way of Landru. Joy be yours, and tranquility, my friend.
And peace and harmony. Are you of the body?
The body is one.
Blessed be the body, and health to all of its parts.
My friends.
Kirk leads Spock and Lindstrom through the arch into the other part of the dungeon.
What is your theory, Mr. Spock?
This is a soulless society, Captain. It has no spirit, no spark. All is indeed peace and tranquility. The peace of the factory, the tranquility of the machine. All parts working in unison.
And when something unexplained happens,
he glances through at McCoy.
Their routine is disrupted.
Until new orders are received. The question is, who gives those orders?
Landru.
There is no Landru, Captain. Not in the human sense.
You're thinking the same thing I am. Mr. Spock, the plug must be pulled.
Sir.
Landru must die.
Captain, our prime directive of non-interference.
That refers to a living, growing culture. Do you think this one is?
The door opens, and Reger and Marplon come in. McCoy stands and places his hand over his heart.
Joy to you all, friends.
It is the gift of Landru.
The two men pass through to where Kirk, Spock, and Lindstrom are waiting.
I brought your signaling devices. You may need them.
What we really need is more information about Landru.
Regger looks uncertain.
You said you wanted us to help you.
Prophecy says...
Never mind what the prophecy says. If you want to be liberated from Landru, we'll need your help.
Captain.
McCoy appears.
You're not of the body!
Peace.
You're not!
To you,
you're
friend.
You're not of the body!
Joy and tranquility.
Lawgivers!
Peace!
Lawgivers! Traitor! Traitors!
He tries to strangle Kirk.
Doc, I don't want to hurt you.
Traitors!
Kirk and Spock hide behind the inner archway as the lawgivers come in. Kirk fells his man with a rabbit punch. Spock punches the other on the jaw. Kirk looks at him.
Isn't that somewhat old-fashioned? Robes.
They dress in the lawgivers' robes and go back to Regger and Tarplon.
Where is Landru?
No, no.
Where do we find him?
We do not see him. Hear him in the Hall of Audiences.
In this building?
Regger and Tarplon look at each other, worried and uncertain.
Yes.
You're going to take us there. Go. Spock, call the Enterprise.
No.
Snap out of it. Start acting like men.
Spock to Enterprise. Status report.
Mr. Spock, I've been trying to reach you.
Report, Scott.
The orbit's still decaying. Give it 6 hours, more or less. And those heat beams are still on us. You've got to cut them off, Mr. Spock, or we'll cook. One way or another.
Scotty, stand by. We're doing the best we can. How's Mr. Sulu?
He's peaceful enough, but he worries me.
Put a guard on him.
On Sulu?
That's an order. Watch him. Captain out.
Captain.
Spock hands Kirk a phaser.
All right. About Landru.
There was war, convulsions. The world was destroying itself. Landru was our leader. He saw the truth. He changed the world. He took us back. Back to a simple time. A time of peace and tranquility.
What happened to him?
He's still alive. He's here now. He sees, he hears. We have destroyed ourselves. Please, no more.
You said you wanted freedom. It's time you learned that freedom is never a gift. It has to be earned. Come on. We're going to find Landru.
No, no, I was wrong. I submit. I bear myself to the will of Landru.
It's too late for that.
No, lawgivers, help! Help me!
All right. It's up to you. Take us to Landru.
With the hysterical Regger immobilized by a Vulcan nerve pinch, Tarplon leads Spock and Kirk, dressed as lawgivers, through a futuristic pillared hallway towards a set of doors.
This is the Hall of Audiences.
Open it.
But this is Landru.
Open it.
Tarplon raises his hands and makes obeisance before the doors, and they open. Spock and Kirk look at each other, lower their hoods, and step past Tarplon into the audience chamber. He follows them.
Landru speaks here.
The two men take off their lawgiver's robes.
Landru! Landru! We are the Archons! We are the Archons. We come to speak. We are the Archons. We want to talk to you.
Landru, he comes.
The projection of the figure in blue and gold robes appears, glaring at them. Tarplon hides his eyes. Spock and Kirk wait for it to speak.
despite my efforts to save you, you have invaded the body and you are causing great harm.
We have no intention of causing harm.
Obliteration is necessary. The infection is strong. For the good of the body, you must die. It is a great sorrow.
We do not intend to die.
All who saw you, all who know of your presence here, must be excised. The memory of the body will be cleansed.
Listen to me.
Useless, Captain. A projection.
They take out their phases.
Yes, Mr. Spock. Let's have a look at the projector.
The projection disappears, and the panel behind it glows red as the phasers burn a large hole through it. In the room behind the panel is a huge computer. Spock and Kirk exchange a glance. Kirk nods.
Of course. It had to be.
Tarplon looks through the hole in amazement and gulps.
Landru.
A machine. This whole society is a machine's concept of perfection. Peace, harmony.
But no soul.
I am Landru. You have intruded.
Pull out its plug, Mr. Spock.
A bright light radiates from the inner room.
Your devices have been neutralized, so it shall be with you. I am Landru.
Landru died 6,000 years ago.
I am Landru. I am he. All that he was, I am. His experience, his knowledge.
But not his wisdom. He may have programmed you, but he could not have given you a soul. You are a machine.
Your statement is irrelevant. You will be obliterated. The good of the body is the prime directive.
The good of the body, Captain. That's the key.
Kirk's eyes narrow, his mind racing.
Yes.
He steps towards the hole in the wall and addresses the computer.
What is the good?
I am Landru.
Landru is dead. You are a machine. A question has been put to you. Answer it.
The good is the harmonious continuation of the body. The good is peace, tranquility. The good of the body is the directive.
Then I put it to you that you have disobeyed the prime directive. You are harmful to the body.
The body is... exists. It is healthy.
The body is dying. You are destroying it.
Do you ask a question?
Kirk puts his hand on his hip and considers.
What have you done to do justice to the full potential of every individual of the body?
Insufficient data.
Without freedom of choice, there is no creativity. Without creativity, there is no life. The body dies. The fault is yours.
Are you aiding the body or are you destroying it?
I am not programmed to answer that question.
Landru, guide us. Landru.
Not necessary, Captain. They have no guidance, possibly for the first time in their lives.
The lawgivers watch as Kirk turns back to the computer.
Landru, answer the question.
Peace, order, and tranquility are maintained. The body lives, but I reserve creativity to me.
Then the body dies. Creativity is necessary for the health of the body.
This is impossible.
Is this truly Landru?
What's left of him after he built and programmed this machine 6,000 years ago?
You must create the good. That is the will of Landru, nothing else.
But there is evil.
Then the evil must be destroyed. That is the prime directive. And you are the evil.
I think. I live.
You are the evil. The evil must be destroyed. Fulfill the prime directive. You,
Andrew, help me.
Are the evil. Fulfill the prime directive.
Help me, help me, help me, help me, help me.
sparks and smoke spew from the huge grey and red machine. Spock glances over at Kirk. Tarplon looks on in amazement. Kirk and Spock cautiously step through the hole in the wall into the computer room and study the computer. Kirk turns back to Marplon.
Well, Marplon, you're on your own now. I hope you're up to it. You can get rid of those robes. And if I were you, I'd start looking for another job. Director Enterprise, come in.
Captain, are you all right?
What about the ship?
The heat rays have gone, Captain. And Mr. Sulu's back to normal.
Believing you. Excellent, Scotty. Stand by to beam up landing party. Let's go see how the others are doing. Marplon can finish up here.
Later.
Captain's log, stardate 3158.7. The Enterprise is preparing to leave Beta 3 in star system C-111. Sociologist Lindstrom is remaining behind with a party of experts who will help restore the planet's culture to a human form.
Marvelous.
What?
The late Landru, Captain. A marvelous feat of engineering. A computer capable of directing the lives of millions of human beings.
But only a machine, Mr. Spock. The original Landru programmed it with all his knowledge, but he couldn't give it his wisdom, his compassion, his understanding, his soul, Mr. Spock.
Predictably metaphysical. I prefer the concrete, the graspable, the provable.
You'd make a splendid computer, Mr. Spock.
That is very kind of you, Captain.
Captain, Mr. Lindstrom from the surface.
Yes, Lindstrom.
Just wanted to say goodbye, Captain.
How's it going?
Couldn't be better. Already this morning, we've had half a dozen domestic quarrels and two genuine knockdown dragouts. It may not be paradise, but it's certainly human.
Sounds most promising. Good luck.
How often mankind has wished for a world as peaceful and secure as the one Landru provided.
Yes. And we never got it. Just lucky, I guess.
Spock raises his eyebrows and nods. Kirk looks over at him, grinning. The Enterprise heads out into space. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.